Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Google thinks big and acts big. Yesterday, it bought big, $12.5 billion for Motorola's wireless division, a mountain of patents, 19,000 Motorola employees, and a new business, wireless hardware. What's a search company doing buying a cell phone smartphone maker? Battle with Apple and Microsoft, for one thing, and maybe more this hour on Point. Google's big acquisition and the future of wireless. You can join the conversation. What's Google up to? Will it be trumping your iPhone? Is everything now about mobile? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Big news, big conference call yesterday. Here's Google CEO Larry Page sharing his optimism about the giant acquisition.
I believe the combination of the two companies is going to create tremendous shareholder value, drive great user experiences, and accelerate innovation.
Google co-founder, now CEO, Larry Page right there. We will hear in this hour from Stephen Levy and Ken Oletta, who have both written big on Google. But joining us first from Seattle is Scott Steinberg. He's head of the technology consulting firm Tech Savvy Global and a wise eye on this business. Scott, welcome back to On Point.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
$12.5 billion, that's a lot, even for Google, its biggest acquisition ever. What made Motorola's wireless arm so valuable, apparently, to Google?
Well, it's a good question as to whether or not the wireless arm itself was so valuable, or its treasure trove of patents. As you've seen with Apple suing Samsung, HTC, Microsoft suing Motorola, companies are getting very litigious at this point, and Motorola has something around 17,000 patents relating to mobile devices. And so for Google, who didn't have a great deal of patents prior to this, it probably was a cover-your-rear maneuver.
So patents are like ammo today? What, you've got to have an army of them just to kind of surround your castle? How's that work?
Well, I think it's an apt comparison. I mean, essentially, it's becoming a nuclear arms race in the technology business. I mean, patents can be very broadly defined depending on the parties involved in the litigation. And the issue is that, as we've seen with Apple getting a German court to issue an injunction against Samsung for, quote-unquote, copying the look and feel and some patents around its iPad and iPhone so that they can't sell the Galaxy Tab in Europe, the results can be devastating. So what happens if you can get a patent and it can be very broadly interpreted to encompass a range of devices or particular functions, then you can actually use that as leverage in court to stop your competitors from achieving success in the retail market.
$12.5 billion to cover your rear, even for Google. That seems like a pretty heavy seat of the pants pad.
Yeah, and I do think that Microsoft and Apple and others are probably celebrating and toasting the fact that they forced Google into this position. I mean, the other thing that you have to keep in mind as an offshoot of this is a consortium of companies, Apple, Microsoft, RIM, they led it, actually bought out for $4.5 billion a range of Nortel Networks patents, which gave them quite a bit of leverage. So obviously, there's definitely an escalating battle going on here. And the other thing, too, is they've compromised Google's position somewhat because Android has been always horizontally integrated. It's an operating system meant to run on a range of devices from a variety of partners. The problem is now, if Google owns Motorola, what do you tell your partners like Samsung and HTC to reassure them that you're going to put their interests first?
Let's back up and go to the basics here, Scott, if you'd help me do that. Because a lot of people, you say Google and they still think search. But here we are talking smartphones and competition with Apple and iPhones and Microsoft. First, let's go back to Android. Apple has its iPhone, a kind of a unitary system here. It's all put together in one package, and it has made great inroads. On the other hand, I'm reading here that Android accounted for, and this is Google's open platform software for smartphones, it accounted for 43.4% of sales in the second quarter, up from 17% a year ago. Just remind us of the basics. What is Android? How does it relate to iPhone? What's Google got going in the smartphone arena here?
Sure. Well, Android is essentially Google's take on the operating system. It can run apps, it can perform programs, and it powers a range of devices, as you pointed out, from smartphones to tablet PCs. Even the Nook e-reader runs Android, for example. And so it's the backbone for a range of mobile devices. And you have to keep in mind that the mobile device market is huge. It's soaring. Google's backdrop has always been, its wheelhouse has always been online search, but it's getting into these new arenas because we're carrying so many devices around in our pocket. I think there were 429 million mobile devices that were sold in quarter two alone, so that's up 16% just from last year. So you can see just how big a market it is. And of course, even if you go back to the online search arena, you have to keep in mind that people are doing it more and more from the handsets or from the laptops or tablet PCs that they're carrying with them, not necessarily from a desktop computer.
So was Google worried that if Apple won or dominated in the wireless world, it would go to somebody else for that search? I mean, wouldn't Google end up on an iPhone anyway?
Well, I think that Google would end up on an iPhone to some extent, but with Android being as powerful as it is and being the backbone of so many different devices, it gives Google a dominant market share, as you pointed out, 43% roughly of the market. And I think that Google was trying to cover its flanks, make sure that Apple wouldn't be able to make inroads. You have to keep in mind that Apple's iOS is a closed environment. It's tightly integrated on a vertical with all of its devices, so iPad, iPhone, of course, Apple TV. They all have a rich integrated experience that combines software and hardware in very effective ways. And to some extent, I mean, the Google Motorola deal gives it the opportunity to do that, where it can have a range of devices that interoperate and have a very nice, deep experience for the end user. But at the end of the day, I think it does have to watch itself against Apple. And the curious part about this now is whether or not its partners, people who were previously using Android to power their devices, will instead go into Microsoft's camp as a means of offsetting Google's power play to guard their flanks, as it were, and perhaps switch to Windows Phone 7.
We're going to hear a number of perspectives on this in this hour, but to your mind, Scott, what is the bottom line competition here? Is it just to sell the most smartphones on your system, or is there a bigger game afoot within all that migration to wireless?
Yeah, I think if you had a conspiracy theory in mind, you'd probably be right. We are looking at a power play to control the future of wireless. Essentially, what's happening here is companies are looking at it saying that the Internet is the gateway to the future. Online is the way of the future. But we need to control the devices that are going to be in everybody's pockets, briefcases, carry-ons. And they understand that mobile devices are the way forward. And to this extent, you know, there's a larger power play, as I pointed out, going on in terms of legal battles, in terms of operating systems, in terms of making sure that consumers have access to these operating systems. A lot of people don't actively switch, you have to keep in mind. They pick a device and they stick with it. So once you're there, and if you happen to be on Android, for example, it's tightly integrated with all of Google services, whether you talk about Gmail, Calendar, Maps. So essentially, whoever controls the operating system and the device controls how the user experience is done, and that's the way forward.
There, my friends, the future and the parameters of the battle for it. Scott Steinberg in Seattle, Washington, head of Tech Savvy Global. It is always great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks, Tom.
Here's a little bit more of Google co-founder, now CEO, Larry Page, explaining yesterday in a conference call how acquiring Motorola, he said, would help with Google's future trajectory.
It's no secret that web usage is increasingly shifting to mobile devices, a trend I expect to continue. With mobility continuing to take center stage in the computing revolution, a combination with Motorola is an extremely important event in Google's continuing evolution that will drive a lot of improvements in our ability to deliver great user experiences.
Google CEO Larry Page yesterday. With us now from New York is Stephen Levy, senior writer at Wired magazine. He's been writing about technology and its impact for decades. Author of seven books, including In the Plex, How Google Thinks, Works, and Shapes Our Lives, and The Perfect Thing, How the iPod Shuffles Commerce, Culture, and Coolness. Right there in the Apple camp. Stephen, it's great to have you back with us on Point. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Great to be back.
Let's hear it from you. How do you see the stakes that are at play in this great big acquisition?
So it struck me as typical Larry Page there. He's faced with a problem, you know, because we just heard Google had a patent problem that it really couldn't keep going very smoothly with his Android system because all these people were filing lawsuits against it for patents. It turns out that when you make a mobile phone, it's impossible to make one without stepping on someone's patent portfolio. And, you know, probably if everyone got what they wanted from the patents, all the patent holders, it would cost more to buy a phone than it would to buy a house, because everyone says, like, you know that most of it is my patent. So you really need your own portfolio for defensive purposes. But faced with this, What Google does, and this is, and you've seen this time and again, is they say, okay, our solution is to make the situation bigger. You know, we're, instead of just solving the patent problem, we're going to go and we're going to do like a much bigger solution, and the patents will go away, the patent problem will go away as part of that, but we'll take on another huge task. So what they did was they said, okay, now we're not only going to get a patent, we're going to take on a company which is going to almost double our size and get us into a new business, and also create these complications there. So this is very typical of Larry Page, who I talk in my book once. Someone came to him when they were setting up international operations. They said, well, how many engineers do we want around the world? And Larry said, well, how many does Microsoft have? And they said, 25,000. He said, maybe we can have 1 million. And that's the way they think at Google.
19,000 new employees from Motorola Mobility. And that's 60% of Google's current workforce. Can you stay Google when you add that big a kind of old line workforce into your famously, you know, fizzy and creative work gang?
That's the one question that we haven't heard Google answer. I remember when Google reached 20,000, there was a lot of hand-wringing at the Googleplex because they thought, like, wow, we're now like a big company. How can we not get bogged down by this? Now, this is an even bigger problem because all these new employees coming in there aren't what they call Googly. They weren't vetted by the Google hiring process, and you know they don't work in the same way, think in the same way. So the question is this going to be something that Google keeps at arm's length from the rest of the company, or are they going to try to Googleize it, which probably would mean swapping out some employees for ones that are more fitting to the corporate culture? And exactly how much is Google going to put its own DNA into this now acquired adventure?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Google's giant takeover of Motorola Wireless and what it means for the future of smartphones and the clash of titans, really, Google, Apple, Microsoft. We've been joined by Stephen Levy, author of In the Plex and The Perfect Thing. He's a senior writer at Wired, joining us today from New York. Also from New York, Ken Oletta joins us. He's written the Annals of Communications column for The New Yorker since 1992, author of Googled, The End of the World as We Know It, and World War 3.0, Microsoft and Its Enemies. Ken Oletta, welcome back to On Point. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
Everybody's talking patents. Is that what you see first and foremost here, Ken?
Obviously, that's a big factor. But the thing that I can't get over is that Google has gone from a partnership business with its Android operating system, making it available to every phone manufacturer in the world, every hardware manufacturer, to basically tell them, hey, wait a second, we're now in bed with a hardware manufacturer, Motorola, who has patents, obviously, which are very valuable. And therefore, if you're another phone company, you have reasons to doubt whether Google is any more your partner. So if you're going to continue to stay with Android, its operating system, are they going to disadvantage you and give the advantages to Motorola? That's a big question. By the way, it's also, in my judgment, ignites another issue, which is many companies, television companies, Hollywood studios, book publishers who have begun to have a better relationship with Google, thinking they could do business with Google TV or Google or YouTube, increasingly now have reason to worry, hey, wait a second, they're going to get into my business too.
Now, why does Google getting into smartphone hardware present itself as a potential worry to TV, book publishers, filmmakers? Why?
Well, it's not the actual phone that they're getting that worries them. It's the fact that Google may turn around and say, hey, wait a second, why can't we be in the content business? You know, why can't we own a Hollywood studio or a TV studio?
You mean because
become a book publisher?
Because mobile hardware is far enough afield that it shows that their ambitions are omnidirectional now?
No, because it shows that Google's ambitions are so broad that it is, even though we had come to relax a little bit and think, oh, wait a second, we could do business with YouTube, for instance. Or Google Books is actually a great new platform for our book publishing ventures and a way to open up competition, give us leverage over, say, Amazon and Apple. In fact, Google may decide, just as they've done in this instance, may decide to basically create content themselves or buy content companies, and therefore they become our competitor, not our partner.
So a partner with Google today may mean you're Google's lunch tomorrow. What about those partners who are out there building smartphones that use the Android system? I mean, Samsung and HTC, very large among them, they account for the biggest bulk of the sales of units with Android in them. What's the calculus? Stephen Levy, does the calculus here maybe amount on Google's part that they don't have any options? They can't go to Apple. Apple's a closed system. Google's got Android. Where else are they going to go?
Well, yeah, the options are somewhat limited. So they have to be, in the short term, they're pretty pleased by this because they were prone to these patent lawsuits from using Android. HTC's already been sued, so is Samsung.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to give them relief in the short term. But as Ken notes, they have now the worry that Google will be competing directly against them. But on the other hand, where else can they really go? Microsoft is being flexible. Is the beneficiary of this, perhaps, but Microsoft has its own special relationship with Nokia, and also the difference is that Microsoft costs money. Google Android is free to these companies, so if they went to Microsoft, they'd not only have to worry about fighting Nokia, which Microsoft is now sharing its labs with to develop new phones, but they have to pay this money there. So in a way, Android is the only open source free company, and if Google has a hit, Google can argue to them that, hey, we're just expanding the platform. There's going to be more apps for Android, and your products will be lifted by this rising tide.
Ken Oletta, Henry Blodgett writing yesterday, thinking about Samsung and HTC, Google's partners here in smartphones, says having your software partner suddenly fire a missile down your throat can't feel too good. Do they have options, or are they stuck with Google anyway, Ken?
Well, they're obviously going to look and see if there are options. I mean, I agree with my friend Steve that there are some advantages, including the fact that it's free. But the worry is that will it be free tomorrow? It's free today. And if, in fact, they can create a great hardware-software combination with Motorola, as, say, Apple has done with the iPhone, then they would, if you're in that business, if you're Samsung or whatever, you're going to say, hey, wait a second, are they going to dump me as a partner? So maybe I better hedge my bets and maybe do business with Microsoft or maybe create my own software, but basically have an alternative.
Going right in the face of Apple here with this. Ken Oletta, Stephen Levy, stand by. Let's bring our listeners in. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Ed is calling. Hi, Ed, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom, thank you. I just want to make a comment. I think that Google and Android have underestimated the power of Apple's closed OS. And ultimately, as an end user, I know what I'm looking for is the seamless integration and the ease with which one device can work with another that Apple is able to provide. And ultimately, I think what that means is Apple is selling a lifestyle or a philosophy with regards to the way that we use these products that is going to win over the open OS that might have this theoretical ability of, being more flexible. And that was basically my comment.
Yeah, it's a great comment, great question, Ed, there from Pittsburgh. Ken Oletta, how about it? I mean, is this Google saying, hey, Apple, you're right. You've got to have this seamless integration, so we're going to have the software and own the hardware maker. Is this Google conceding
that? Then there are other devices. Apple, as the caller just said, they have the iPad and they have all these other devices and the iPod and they're all integrated with Apple and they're really cool. I mean, I remember being in Asia last year,
mm-hmm.
and there was no, in China, for instance, there was no iPhone. And the person I was walking with was an Australian, and they had an iPhone in the rear, and we were being followed. And I said to her, she lives in, what was that all about? And she said, I'll tell you what it was about. It was about my iPhone. There's such interest in all over the world.
That much interest in iPhones, but is this Google saying you're right, Apple, Ken?
Well, in part it is, sure. They're saying that Steve Jobs, who when he did this, when he said, we're going to be in both the hardware and the software business, people say, wait, that doesn't work. Sony tried that with a movie studio. It didn't work. But in fact, it did work for Steve Jobs. And so obviously there is some element of Google aping Apple here.
Let's go to Max in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Max, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to say that Google bought Android from a small company in like 2006, I think it was, right? And that Android itself is becoming more closed source every day. They haven't really released the 3.0 source code. So I could see it that Google is eventually going to become it's more vertically integrated than it, you know, it's more horizontally integrated now. I just thought that might be something that could happen. I could see that happening.
Yeah, Max, thanks for calling. Stephen Levy, how about it? Can you see now Motorola and Apple and Google going off into their labs? Maybe not giving Samsung and HTC and others a sort of, you know, absolute full package of Android anymore, and coming out increasingly with a, yeah, Android's open platform, but increasingly a kind of special closed system of their own product, Stephen, or not?
Well, the problem for Google going down that path is that, you know, because your first caller noted that Android really is a Trojan horse for all of Google's other products. So they even though they don't make as much money on an Android phone, anywhere near as much as Apple makes for the iPhone, they get a benefit. People use their other products, and they love the idea that it's now the most popular, just in terms of sheer numbers, phone system there. What's really going to be interesting to see is every year Google selects one of its partners and works very closely with that partner to try to come up with something close to this integration that Apple has so naturally. And they said, Larry Page said yesterday, well, we're going to compete, our Motorola division will compete with these other companies each year to be the favored one for the hot new phone of the year there. Well, I imagine there's going to be some amount of uproar if the Motorola division of Google wins that little contest among the other partners. I think it'll probably be in Google's interest to almost exclude Motorola from that contest. Maybe it could work naturally with Motorola for phones, but just to keep nice relations among the partners, because I imagine at that moment the other partners are going to be grumbling and wondering whether the game was fixed.
Stephen Levy, author of In the Plex, with us, and Ken Auletta, author of Googled. Brooks in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Brooks, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to mention that I think this is kind of an application of what the previous callers have said, and your expert there, is I think that the Android system might have been an interim keep your foot and your toe in the market type of product. I'm wondering if that now that Google has bought Motorola and they have a hardware system, that they're about to introduce something that's revolutionary and similar to the way that Apple has offered their product, that they've got something that they realize that they're going to corner the market on, and that they needed a hardware division in order to match it up. If I was one of Google's partners in the hardware divisions right now of other companies, I would be worried. I would think that perhaps that they were being shut out.
Well, let's take that in pieces, Brooks, and thank you. Ken Auletta, first, corner the market. Is that even the dynamic here anymore, or are we simply going to continue to have great big competing systems, Apple's, Google's, Microsoft, for that matter, in wireless?
I think the idea of cornering the market or saying that we have this product in development in our laboratory and it's going to take over the entire market, a lot of companies have gone bankrupt with that giddy belief. I mean, I don't think you corner this market. And first of all, Apple is here and to stay, and they just have a great product, and it's roughly 20% worldwide market share. Android is double that. But there are other players. There's Nokia and there's RIM and Microsoft, and they will be there, and there'll probably be more consolidation in this world, which will increase the market share of some competitor.
So then, here we are. We're going to have multiple players, hot competition. Even with that, you look back. What was it last year when Google CEO then Eric Schmidt said that Google was going for a mobile first strategy? I guess if wireless is replacing the PC, then it's at some point it's not even about the hardware anymore. This is just the new way things are. So what do they compete over then, Ken? What's the what? Once you know you've got a couple big owners of this huge new arena.
The what is constantly changing. Just a couple of years ago, we thought that no one would watch on a portable device television. Well, they do, you know, and we're going to 4G, and I mean, the world is changing so fast that the ability to predict what the hot new product will be 2 years from now, it's very hard to do that. And it's also very exciting. What Google knows, and they're right about this, there are 5 billion mobile phones in the world today. And increasingly, that number is multiplying for smartphones, which are capable of doing everything. And so they have to be in that business. And they didn't want to be in the hardware business initially. They opposed that. They didn't want to own a telephone company. But they have to be in this business, they realize. And so they made a decision which alienated, first it alienated their partner and idol Steve Jobs of Apple, and now it will alienate some of their phone partners. But they're just making a ruthless business decision.
So what's the stronger base to come into this new world where computing is on wireless? Is the stronger base can search, the sort of taproot of Google, or is the stronger base, what, design, I guess maybe you could call Apple's taproot?
Or is it, you know, is it social networking? And you know, it, all those things are competing. Clearly, search is less important today than it was 3 years ago. Facebook is more important today than it was 3 years ago. Apple is more important than it was 5 years ago. And so the world, it's all changing very fast, but search is still growing. It's not like search is dying. And in fact, search will grow because there are more mobile sets, and with 4G, people have faster search results.
Speaking of Facebook, we got a lot of comments on Facebook, and one Mark here says, yes, I like Apple products, but the true irony is that I loved them more when they were the underdog. He says this is typed on an iPhone, but what about it? Does Apple have to sort of, you know, corporate up to compete in this time? Can it still have its maverick posture, Ken, and win as the stakes get so extremely large here?
I mean, it's amazing to me that a company that is valued at more than Google has managed over the years to maintain this underdog image. Part of it is just brilliant marketing. But part of it is that the guy who leads that company just is a Pied Piper who goes his own way, and people relate to that and relate to the fact that Apple is a different kind of company. And Google has had that throughout its history as well. But not with the kind of cachet that I think Steve Jobs and Apple have. But will that continue? I don't know.
Where does it leave Microsoft? Are they the odd man out here looking forward?
Well, it used to be that we would think that, you know, if you go back 10 years ago, Microsoft was the evil empire. Now, increasingly, people say, wait a second, maybe the evil empire is Google. In fact, they weren't evil. Microsoft wasn't evil, nor is Google. They're just very ambitious companies that want to dominate the market, just like every other company wants to, and you got to watch them.
Do you think that this acquisition overall augurs well for consumers, or is there a consolidation here that may work against them, Ken?
I don't know the answer. As long as there's competition, the consumer will benefit, and I believe there will continue to be competition. You know, there was an argument when people like me covered the Microsoft trial a decade ago, that you had to break up Microsoft. And I always thought that was a stupid argument, because I thought technology was changing so fast that ultimately Microsoft would be weakened by technology. And that turned out to be the case. And I think you have to leave some flexibility, because the speed of technological change is such, and the people inventing things in garages is such, that you have to leave open the possibility that companies that look dominant today will be upended, as most companies throughout history have been.
Big as they may be, big money flying in the last 24 hours still needs regulatory sign-off, but they're optimistic about that. Ken Auletta of The New Yorker is author of Googled, The End of the World as We Know It. Ken, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. See you, Steve.
Bye, Ken.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Google's giant takeover of Motorola Wireless, $12.5 billion acquisition in the works. Both boards have approved it. It needs a little regulatory approval. We're looking at what it means for the future of smartphones and the clash of titans, Google, Apple. Microsoft. The great Stephen Levy is with us, senior writer at Wired, author of In the Plex, How Google Thinks, Works, and Shapes Our Lives, and The Perfect Thing, How the iPod Shuffles Commerce, Culture, and Coolness. Knows a little bit about Google and Apple and a lot more. Google Senior Vice President and Chief Legal Officer David Drummond acknowledged in a conference call yesterday that an acquisition of this size will require regulatory approval in the U.S., Europe, possibly elsewhere. He named some reasons why Google was quite confident, he said, they would get approval.
Android is clearly added competition, innovation, increased user choice. We think that protecting that ecosystem is pro-competitive, almost by definition.
Well, we shall see what these governments think. Wayne in Acton, Massachusetts, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Fascinating conversation, as always. Question I have is, what does the acquisition by Google portend for the wireless carriers? You know, companies like AT&T and Verizon Wireless. You know, are we to expect that at some point in the future, Google is going to start to install fiber optic cable and compete against those companies, or
yeah.
Is that really not critical to their business model?
Yeah, where does this end? Stephen Levy, how about it? You know, is Google willing to compete with anybody, everybody? If they buy a hardware company, they're going to start laying, I don't know, wire and transmitters too?
Well, actually, I don't think that's beyond the pale there. Google right now is building a system for Kansas City, Missouri and Kansas, of you know, super high-speed broadband to try to do a proof of concept that you can get it for a reasonable price. And if you recall, Google was a bidder in the big spectrum auction for broadband a few years ago. Their purpose was to draw these other companies in because the rules of that particular auction would have required the carriers to have some favorable rules to outsiders like Google there. So the idea was to draw in one of the other companies and meet the reserve bid, and then Google would get out. But Larry Page, after they bid and they finally were topped by Verizon and supposedly got what they wanted, wanted to keep going. Maybe we have a shot at this spectrum that we could be a carrier company. Maybe we should be a carrier company. And he was talked out of it. But I wouldn't be surprised if that were someplace Google might have wanted to go in the future. Certainly with Motorola in hand, their relationships with carriers will be strengthened. They have a pretty good one with Verizon, but AT&T and Google don't get along too well right now.
And what about, I mean, that's just incredible. You're talking about that. And maybe competing, you know, in transmission here. What about immediate implications for the carriers?
Well, the immediate implications would be, I think, that Google might have a little better relationship with them because Motorola does, and that might carry through, particularly if Motorola's executive team stayed on for a while.
Though, as Ken Auletta says these days, you know, a nice relationship with Google, and the next thing you know, Google's having you for lunch.
Well, basically, anyone who's followed Google for a while, yeah. I think, would have already known that. I think that the Android partners, they've already had one bout like this. Google came out with its own phone a couple of Christmases ago, and they wanted to sell it in a different way, and it wasn't really a success. But that certainly should have been a warning signal to those companies that Google wasn't going to be totally hands-off when it came to wanting a say in the way the hardware was.
Let me ask you, Jeff writes to us online. He says, you know what gets me? All of these corporations have done so much to innovate, and yet the price of using a wireless does not come down. Do you see any change in that with this big consolidation, Stephen?
Well, one thing that Larry Page did say several times is he wants to address the pricing there. In a way, it's the carriers that determine the monthly fees for the people pay. Google has you can say it's done its part by giving away its operating system there. That's 20% of the cost of the phone that presumably the manufacturers like Motorola and Samsung were passing along to the consumer. Maybe not.
Speaking of Google's omnivorous appetite and what it may gain with Motorola, now Motorola is also in the cable television business. Not that you can go out and buy it at Best Buy, but if you, when you get Comcast or Verizon, whatever, that box, that cable box that they bring you, many, many of those are made by Motorola. Does this give Google and Google TV, which has been kind of languishing, Steve, somehow an in, a bigger in, into cable TV?
Well, I think it does. I think it will help them do that. But to really have a revolutionary vision, you really need to have the cable companies and the phone companies that provide that sort of entertainment in a box to kind of go along with that. Steve Jobs has publicly said that he's been frustrated. He wants to remake the living room, but because of the barrier that these places set up, that they want to keep their business model, he really hasn't been able to do that. And I think Google, to be really revolutionary, would face those same obstacles.
Meaning if it wanted to try to bring new kinds of content into the living room?
Right. Well, basically, we're in a situation with cable that we were with the carriers like years ago, that they block a really innovative approach because they really like their business model now. When you go to Comcast or Time Warner, they control how much you pay. They control what programs you see. They control the billing, and no one else can get an in on that. People don't go out and choose their set-top box the way they choose their phones. And that was the way it used to be for phones.
So you don't see leverage even with Motorola in the family now for Google to begin to crowbar its stuff down the wire over that cable box?
Well, I think those carrier cable powers would go kicking and screaming.
Yeah. Steve in Norfolk, Virginia. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I had a BlackBerry for years when my contract expired. I went and looked into the Android. I purchased it. And within a couple weeks, I noticed my contacts would mysteriously disappear. When I went into the store, the person there said, yeah, we've had a couple complaints about that. But, she didn't offer a fix. And all the bells and whistles and features are great. But when you're in sales, the basic storing of contacts couldn't be more critical. So I went and got an Apple phone and I've been delighted ever since.
Steve, we've got it. Steven, there's a consumer complaint straight from the consumer.
I don't know which flavor of the Android it had.
Yeah.
You could argue that getting Motorola gives Google at least one company that it has responsibility and control of how it handles the contacts. I'm sure Google wouldn't be very happy to hear that their operating system with any of their partners is dropping the contacts, because that's a basic part of the Google ecosystem, to have your calendar, your contacts, your mail, and all that other stuff. So if that doesn't work, that's a problem.
But let me ask, I don't know all the nuances here, but my impression is that for some years now, Motorola introduced the first commercial cell phone, but that's a long time ago. My impression is they may have a lot of patents, but when it comes to the latest hardware, they haven't exactly been the cutting edge. Am I wrong, Steve?
Well, you're right. They were once like the leader, and then they had the first one, and then they had the Razr. Remember that phone?
Sure.
That was a huge hit, and then they faded away, but they actually have been coming back because of Android. The Droid phone, which is made by Motorola, is very popular. So they're not as powerful as they used to be, but they've been building up their market share again because of Android.
Kathy in Williamsburg, Virginia. Kathy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question about Google's core business, which is the fact that they basically branded the Internet search.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of big exposés in the past year about how companies were gaming their Internet search engine and their software and, artists paying people to get them to the top of the search. And I'm wondering whether this whole thing is going to distract Google from keeping their standards up.
That's a great question. What about this? We all think of it's core business, online search. And now, as you say, Stephen, it's got the muscle to go in a lot of directions. You hear Kathy's question.
I do, and I think Google has to be constantly vigilant. This has been a struggle really since the relatively early days of Google. Once people realized how popular search was and how powerful it was to a company, how important it was, to rate high, to rank high in those Google searches, they started figuring out ways to game the system. And Google constantly tries to fight back and make those results relevant. But I think underneath that, your caller has a great point to say this is really where Google makes its money. You know, about $30 billion a year that Google reaps in revenues, almost all of it comes from advertising there. It's a fantastic business. Google does it better than anyone. And, no matter how well they do selling smartphones, that are branded Motorola or Motorola Google, I don't know what they're going to be called, they didn't say, it's not going to be as profitable as search. The search ads, the AdWords they have, that's why Android was so powerful, because it brought people into Google to do the searches where Google could make its money there. So I think that, your caller has a terrific point. Google, better not lose track of that, but it's going to be distracted trying to figure out what to do with these 19,000 new employees.
And hardware, I mean, that's a brutally competitive business, low margin business compared to what Google has done. And yet, you know this gang really well, Stephen Levy. I mean, they think big. They clearly saw this merger of wireless and everything else they do. I guess this is the biggest acquisition ever. They saw it as critical.
Well, who knows what they're really thinking? Maybe they have a way to totally remake the business model of phones. Maybe they want to give away the phones. Maybe they figured out a way to make phones so cheap and to make money on the back end so much that they'll give it away. That's the kind of thing that Google has been known for. You take the things that are in smaller domains like navigational software, right? It used to be to get the real high end navigation GPS software that told you turn right here, turn left there, was something you had to pay per month for. And Google said, hey, we think people should have it free, and we'll make money on ads.
So maybe give away phones for free. What else can you imagine out there? If this isn't just purely defensive, and we should say, just because that's what Google says it is today doesn't mean that's what they really are thinking. There have been past masters of indirection here. Beyond the defensive, could you see other positive reasons to get into this?
There might be parts of the hardware business that they learn with Motorola that could be entirely new devices. Who knows? Google's always full of fascinating long range ideas. They have a secret division called Google X that works on these kinds of things. So maybe those implants we put in our heads to do searches without typing or things like that will be made in Chicago by Motorola.
Google X may sit inside your head. AJ in Somerville, Massachusetts, thanks for calling, AJ. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
2 points. Your commenter brought up a very interesting point in that Google might change the business model of how phones work. Apple's already done this once. Remember, they don't make money more of their back end on your apps and stuff than probably
right.
on the phone.
Yep.
The second point your commenter mentioned was that Google would now have more say in how the hardware is specified. But that's no different than what tier one customers such as Apple and your big phone manufacturers do right now. As such, if you're working with one of these companies, they tell you exactly what they need. If you're a chip partner, they tell you exactly what you need, and it's up to you to deliver on that.
Yeah, so a lot of motion on this front already. It leaves me thinking or wondering, Stephen, people are calling about Verizon and carriers of another age when AT&T was so big, and then suddenly the government looked at it and said, you know what, this is so big, it's got to be broken up. Are we taking steps in that direction here? Google, they say this particular move is not anti-competitive, but if it goes in so many directions, does there come a point at which we've got an old style breakup of Google required the same way the Bell system and AT&T was?
Well, in this particular case, the antitrust experts have been saying that Google will probably get an okay there. Though I think just having to go through the process is going to be uncomfortable for Google, mainly because it's going to take a while. Google would want to get this started tomorrow on doing whatever plans it has for revolutionizing the phone business with Motorola. But I think down the road, Google has to be concerned. It's already the target of a United States investigation by the Federal Trade Commission and the European Union there. Though, as you say, we broke up AT&T, and then AT&T, almost like organism, like you sliced up, the kind of like reconstructed, is as big as it's ever been now.
now.
Yeah. Google stock smacked around in the last day and a half since this all came out. What does that mean? Investors nervous about this?
I think investors are always nervous when a company takes on something, particularly when it's not in their area of expertise. The stock didn't go down that much in this case. I think people are waiting to see what's going to happen. Interestingly, the stock of some of the Google competitors went up, and it's unclear whether that's because they thought that this would be advantageous to them or that someone else might bid on them, that they would be in play.
And then we've got a listener just fixated on this patent front. $12.5 billion for a patent defense, Google is saying. Michael writes, stop the patent madness. You know, want to create a climate for work? Fix the patent system. Barack Obama's been talking a lot about the patent system in the White House in recent days. There's legislation coming up already through the House and Senate, going to the Senate now to be sort of scrubbed up for the president's signature. But it's not taking on the issues here that leave people so vulnerable to litigation that they're required to spend billions, Steve, to defend themselves here. Is it a drag on growth?
Yeah, I think it definitely is at this point. What muddies the system is the needs of the technology industry is different from the needs of the pharmaceutical industry, and they have a very big voice in how patents work out. And I think that because of this, the legislation that's come up really doesn't address the big problems we have here. The real victims here is the next company, the company that wants to be the next Google or Apple. They can't possibly get in the game without some sort of protection unless we change the rules here.
Well, let's change them then. We've got to keep breaking it open for the new. It's exciting to see what's going on right here today. Stephen Levy, senior writer at Wired and author of In the Plex, How Google Thinks, Works, and Shapes Our Lives. It is always great to have you. Thank you so much for being with us today, Stephen.
Thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Find me at Tom Ashbrook, NPR. This is On Point.